The following is a production of Omnis.tv.
On this episode of Revelator, I welcome music guest Fiction Reform. I also talk cookies, college basketball, top movies, this weekend in music history, the NBA playoffs, and a lot more happening now.
And enjoy the show.
Hey everybody, how's it going? My name is Ryan. Welcome to another edition of Revelator. Got a good one for you tonight. A lot of really good stuff. And we're gonna talk NBA, we're gonna talk college basketball, we're gonna talk movies, music, and we're gonna talk cookies. What? That's gonna be the lead story. But first off, I want to wish my lovely wife Carolyn a happy birthday. Her birthday is today, so happy birthday, Carolyn, and for putting up with me, and happy birthday to you. But I tell you what, let's go ahead and get this show rolling. Fiction Reform, also our music guest tonight, joining us here in a moment. So hang around for that really, really great band. You're going to really dig it. I found this story the other night, and I was telling Mike, I was like, sometimes I shouldn't write show content at 1 a.m., but I do sometimes. So I found this story, and the name is perfect. Her name is Portia Gross. Now, Miss Portia Gross, 21, was arrested for allegedly having a crack cookie shoved in her vagina. It gets better. It does get better from there. I'm telling you, it does get better. Now, she was arrested in Florida. A lot of these stories come from Florida. There's something in the water down there for sure. She was pulled over originally for having faulty tags on March 9th. Now, the deputy said she was spotted with marijuana in her vehicle and was taken into custody. And female jail employees conducted a cavity search on Miss Gross when they discovered pieces of crack cocaine cookie hidden in her genitals. Now, a cookie is... I love the description here. A cookie is crack cocaine that has been formed into a round disc, typically around 3 inches across, according to the National Drug Intelligence Center. A cookie can usually sell between $900 to $1,000. That's one delicious cookie. I don't know if it's still delicious considering it was stuffed up in Miss Gross's vagina or not. But, I hate to tie the cookie monster into this, but hell, I have to, right? I can't resist. I mean, even the cookie monster really, really is into cookies, right? He really likes them. And it got me wondering at 1 a.m., maybe he just really loves cookies. Maybe he really likes vagina cookies. I mean, most people like to dip their cookies in milk. Cookie Monster dips his in vagina, and all you can think is,
for this cookie! Nom, 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 oh, nom, 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 nom. Ah, bye-bye.
Thank you, Cookie Monster, for stopping in for the little cameo tonight. Cookie, cookie, cookie. Moving on tonight, I don't know if there's anything as a salty breath mint, but I found this story and I couldn't resist telling it to you this evening. Now, a former student in Saginaw, Michigan, put semen in a breath mint drop and distributed it to students. And obviously, he was arrested. Jordan T. Drake pled guilty in January for altering food in May of 2012. He said he put the semen in a bottle of ice drop breath mints as a senior prank. This was reported by MLive.com. Now, police were notified that Drake's semen stunt was ingested by several students. This is reported by a local TV station, WNEM, there. Now, Drake was a high school achiever and also was at the Saginaw Arts and Science Academy for an incident. He was an award-winning science fair and quiz bowl award winner. He was suspended after internal investigation into the semen mint drops. Now, he lost his scholarship at Michigan State, and he's also going to lose his internship at Down Chemical Company as well. Now, my first thought was this. Now, I don't know much about breath mints and how they're made, but I know, obviously this kid's 18 years old. He's a science expert. I don't remember ever seeing an episode of Bill Nye's Science Guy semen breath mints. Now, maybe I need to brush up on the Netflix series. I don't know. But on the other side of this, how many people actually – it doesn't specify how many people actually – had consumed the semen breath mints. And I find it funny that only one person, I assume it's a woman, I don't know, but we'll assume that it's a girl for the sake of this particular bit. Now, I wonder how many breath mints she had actually consumed before she was like, you know what? Something funny about this breath mint. What is it? I can't quite put my taste bud on it. Is it a breath mint? Is spunk mint? I mean, spearmint surprise, You know, or I guess it'd be spermint surprise in this case. I mean, I'm not sure. You know, maybe she was like, you know what? I do recognize that taste from somewhere. After, you know what? Moving on to music news this evening. After a dozen years together, My Chemical Romance is calling it a day. The band announced that they were breaking up through their website this past Friday. The band, you know, has been together for the past 12 years. It has been a true blessing. The announcement said we had gone many places and got to travel, you know, and seen many different experiences and been places we never imagined possible. We shared the stage with many people we admire, people we look up to, and best of all, our friends and family. And now look at all things must come to an end. Thanks for the support and being part of our adventure. Now, the band formed in 2001 with high school friends Jared May and Matt Pressler, and were a major force in the mainstream emo phase. You know, they had a big release in 2004, Three Cheers for Sweet Revenge. It went platinum. They toured with Green Day and a couple of co-headliners in 2005, Warped Tour. And their last release was in 2010, which was titled Danger Days, The True Lies of Fabulous Killjoys. I can't say that I've ever listened to that album, but fair to pass it on to you. If you're a Chemical Romance fan, they are no longer a band. The Summerland Tour, I found this tour interesting. This is kind of like a 90s alternative rock tour right here, featuring Everclear, Live, Filter, and Sponge. They're going to hit 30 U.S. dates starting May 29th in Fort Myers, and wrapping up the tour on July 28th in Kansas City, Missouri. Last year's Summerland was a blast. From Everclear, Art said, he says, you know, this year we're looking to take it to another level and play with a lot of other great alternative guitar rock band. So it sounds like an interesting show. If you're really into the, you know, the mid late 90s alternative bands, Live, Filter, Sponge, Everclear, looks like it's going to be a pretty decent, Summerland tour, and they're, you know, playing 30 shows. So, moving on tonight, a rare set of photographs taken on the Beatles' 1965 concert at Shea Stadium were sold in auction this past week for over $46,000. The BBC reports that pictures were snapped by an amateur photographer named Mark Weinstein. He used a fake, this is a great story. Used a fake press pass to get backstage for the Beatles' biggest show at the historic New York concert, which drew them more than 55,000 fans, again in 1965. And there was only one other photographer. You think about today's society. If a band as big as the Beatles were playing Shea Stadium or Yankee Stadium or, you know, any big stadium, you know, there would only be one photographer available? Hardly. You know, today it would be, you know, everything's digital and there'd be, you know, a slew of people all over the place. There was only one photographer there and he actually ran out of film. So if it wasn't for this guy, Mark Weinstein, getting backstage and having the camera taking photos, those photos would have never been taken of the historic event of the Beatles playing at Shea Stadium in 1965 and selling the photos, you know, some odd years later for over $46,000. Now, I know a lot of people are very excited about this album, as am I. Queens of Stone Age will release a brand new CD this June. It is set by the name of Like Clockwork. Now, on the band's official website, you can hear brief snippets of the new tracks as well. And I tell you what, who's who of artists are going to appear on this particular CD. Dave Grohl is going to play drums again, much like he did on Songs for the Deaf. I believe that album came out in 2001, 2002, somewhere around there. Hard to believe that album's that old. But Dave Grohl will not tour with the band. Also featured on the album, Trent Reznor, Elton John, and also they're reuniting with their original bass player, Nick Oliveri, who appeared on their last album in 2007. So keep track on that. I would imagine a tour would come at some point, maybe a late summer, early fall tour for Queens of Stone Age. Again, Dave Grohl will not be touring with the band, but is playing drums on the album. If you're like me, I love hearing Dave Grohl play drums. Now, let's take a look at the top movies at the box office this week, starting with number 10, working our way up. The movie Snitch, $1.89 million. Identity Theft at $2.5 million. Jack the Giant Slayer at $2.9 million. The Incredible Burt Wonderstone, $4.3 million. Spring Breakers at $4.8 million. The movie Admission at $6.1 million. The movie The Call, featuring Halle Berry, $8.9 million. Oz, The Giant and Powerful. In 3 weeks at the box office, this film has grossed $177 million this past weekend at $21.5 million. Olympus Has Fallen, opening up the weekend at $30.3 million. And The Croods, looks like a great film for kids, at $43.6 million. And also this week, G.I. Joe, featuring The Rock, will be released. I'd imagine that'll be the number one movie, I would assume, as we head into the spring, summer movie series. A lot of interesting movies coming out, so we'll keep you abreast on those as they are being released. Least. Now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the moment you've all been waiting for, coming to the Revelator show this evening on Omnis.tv, hailing from Orange County, California, Fiction Reform!
Woo! Yeah! Love
it! How are you doing? And welcome to the show. You know what? We were talking earlier, and it's been a long time. We've been actually working on having you guys on, I think maybe even before Thanksgiving. It's been a long road, and I appreciate you guys sticking with me and taking the time out and finally getting on the new show, Revelator. We appreciate it.
Thank you, but I think we're listening to your monologue and we're thinking of changing our name. Either Vagina Cookie or Breath Mints of Semen.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I don't think you could go wrong with either one of those, to be honest with you. I mean, I guess it just depends on your choice of taste. No pun intended there.
Hey.
But tell you what, before we get going tonight, how about you guys introduce yourselves to the audience, if you would, please.
My name is Brenna. I am the vocalist and rhythm guitar player.
I am Danielle. I play bass and I drive the Winnebago.
I'm Aaron. I'm the guitar player.
Very cool. Well, I appreciate you guys all stopping in. Now, I want to start off, you know, you guys have been playing a lot of live shows, I know, and you have some more coming up, and we'll get into that a little bit, but you guys have been playing with some great bands, too. One is, you know, Social Distortion. You guys have played with the Misfits as well. Talk to me about, you know, the experience of playing with bands that, you know, been doing it for a long, long time, very professional, have very, very, you know, really great sounds. Talk to me about, you know, the experience, what you learned from playing with these bands.
Well, the Social Distortion show was really cool because their management made it a point for, Social D every year will play like 30 shows at the House of Blues, Anaheim, and Hollywood. They just make it a big event every year. And this year, they made it a point to pick great Orange County local bands, like LA Orange County. And we were one of the bands that came up, and, you know, they said we're impressive enough, great enough to put on stage with them. So that was cool to have them, you know, search through all these bands, and we came up near the top to be able to play with them.
It felt good that we weren't on the show just because we were hobnobbing with the right people, because our management knew this person, or, you know, we have money. It wasn't because of that. It was only because they simply liked us. And I like the fact that a giant band like Social Distortion still understands the importance of local bands and doing it yourself, grassroots kind of bands. And it was really cool that they understood that and really wanted to help out with the locals. It meant a lot.
And they set the bar pretty high. I got to be honest, when you walk in to load in your gear and you see Social Distortion doing a sound check, they sound pristine.
Yeah.
Boy, did the nerves start going.
Here it comes, guys. Yeah.
Wore two pairs of Depends that night.
Definitely.
Well, I'd imagine so. I mean, those guys have been there for a while, and I've had the pleasure of seeing them a couple times, and you're right. I mean, they're a tight band. I mean, they've really evolved over the years. It's always interesting to see a band that's been around for a long time and has had the successes they've had, and to see them develop and grow musically, you know, from the first couple records to where they are now. It's really amazing. And I'd imagine they seem like really cool guys. Do you guys get a chance to interact with them and hanging backstage and talk with them and stuff?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, not. The reality of it is when you do play gigs like that, you do kind of realize that even though this is fun, this is a job. And you have to, like, get focused and prepared to do, like, a really good job, because you have these people that shelled out a lot of money to see you, and it's not just, you know, let's just have a bunch of fun and goof around and just play music. This is, we have to make these people's nights worth what they paid. So even though we were kind of goofing around backstage, they were all upstairs practicing, doing, you know, I'm sure the drummer Dave was doing, like, paradiddles on their practice pad, and they're warming up, stretching their hands. So we didn't really see them much before, but we did see them afterwards as everything was starting to relax. We didn't get a chance to say hi or anything, but it was still a nice experience to see them behind the scenes.
Although on the flip side, I think it was a couple of years ago, we played the Seattle Sound Fest, and the Vandals were actually the headlining band. Total opposite experience. They invited us to come down, watch them do sound check. We got to hang out in the parking lot, smoke cigarettes. I got to make fun of...
They were total goofballs.
Well, it was Derek from Alkaline Trio playing drums, and I made fun of him for wearing Crocs.
As you should.
That went over poorly. But, but I guess it all depends on the band.
Yeah.
Well, cool. It sounds like a good experience. And you also were selected as the Orange County, you know, at least nominated for Orange County Music Award for Best Live Band, and also nominated for Best Punk Band. I believe you were nominated for that this year and 2011. Is that right?
That's right.
Correct.
And the way the Best Live Band works is, you know, they have an open submission period and you put your name in, all that stuff. And then they do their research. And this year it was about 500 applicants who, you know, submitted. And then they have to whittle that down to 35 because they have seven weeks of showcases, five bands a night. So they take 500, they whittle down to 35, and for that, those odds, even make the showcases pretty awesome. But we ended up killing our showcase, and we made it to the finals, which is the top five bands.
Yep.
Very cool. Now, I know you guys – no, go ahead. I'm sorry, man.
Hello?
Oh, I thought I lost you there for a second. I'm sorry. Now, you guys didn't necessarily win the competition, but you guys obviously get a top five band is a great honor. Now, I believe the judges were Noodles from Offspring and a few others.
We didn't actually meet any of the judges.
It's the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, it's the Wizard of Oz.
They pull the strings behind the curtain and just tell you the results. But we were up against a lot of bands from a lot of different categories.
Yeah, it was like that night there was a folk singer, there was a reggae band, and there was like an old school like 70s rock band. So there was
Molly Hatchet.
Yeah, it was a big span, and because it was like the finals, every band brought it. So it was like, well, it really could have been anyone's game because everyone was awesome that night.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Well, it sounds like a really good experience, and I know, you know, playing live, obviously you guys are a great live band, and hopefully sometime I get to see you guys live, but what's your favorite part about being in front of a live crowd?
It's the adrenaline. For me, well, also all these guys, we've been doing this in various bands for well over a decade, and I love practicing, I like writing new songs, but when I'm on stage, I get the same shakes that I did when I first started playing. It's like the night before Christmas, like, You know it's coming, and you're not necessarily nervous. Like, I'm not scared to do what I'm about to do, but I get this, like, fun anxiety, like, oh, yeah, here it comes. And then as soon as I hit the stage, it's just I'm in a different time and a different place, and nothing matters. Like, the job, you know, relationships, the stress, the money, like, nothing matters. It's an even playing field, and we're in the moment.
Yeah. I've been to hundreds, if not thousands, of live shows on the other side. Being in the crowd builds that up inside you. You get a little envious of the bands that are up there. And when you finally get to do it, it's a great feeling. It really is, like Brenda said, it's all adrenaline. You can't beat it.
Yeah, there's nothing like, you know, playing a show and looking out in the crowd and the crowd's just having a ball, and it just, you have more fun as they have more fun, and it's just great.
And even though we tend to still have the same presence to us, not like we're faking it, but if there's nobody in the audience, because we've played really crappy shows before.
Plenty.
But we don't play our game any down. Like, we still bring it to the fullest level. But there is something to be said when the crowd is packed. And I've had people sing along to our songs that I have never seen before in my life. Like at the Social D show and the Misfits show, like, people are screaming our songs. And you know when you're in the audience and you're looking at the lead singer, the guitar player, just hoping they make eye contact with you because you're singing the same words they are. And I look down and I see that same person in the audience trying to get our attention. I'm like, oh my God, that's a trip. That's a really good moment right there. And that's what we do it for. Bad shows come and go, but every once in a while you get a good gem and you make a couple really good memories that are going to stick around till the day you die.
Very cool. Great answer. And I'll direct this question, I guess, to any of you. What is the most interesting thing you've seen in a live crowd, whether it be a show that you've played for, you know, 25 people, or be a show that, you know, you played for 1,500? Is there anything in the crowd where you kind of look down and you go, you look at one another on stage and go, you see that shit on stage, you know?
Number one's obvious. Yeah. Brenna can't stop laughing every time we get this question.
I want to poke it out of my memory.
We played Bakersfield, California. No, Fresno, California. Naked redhead kid,
no pants.
With his little acorn genitals,
Firecracker
was just having a ball. He was in the circle pit. He was coming up onto the stage. He was hugging people.
And this is not a clean house. There was dog poop and piss and vomit everywhere. And he was swimming around it in the floor, just getting all types of STDs everywhere. And he was the punkest person I think I've ever met in my life.
There was no one more punk than that dude.
Yeah, it's like we went back to 1970 some odd in the house that Black Flag grew up in.
Yeah.
And played a show there.
I did not shake his hand, but I saluted him.
I'm going to touch you. Never see you, sir.
Yeah.
It sounds like he would have needed maybe a semen mint or something. Like.
I think he's the one that created that. Maybe that's the same skin.
Couldn't hurt.
Well, cool. Well, thanks for sharing that with me. Now, also, you know, when you're playing these shows, you know, playing with Social D and, you know, a lot of these other bands, you know, obviously, you know, getting preparation. Do you have any like pre-show preparation or daily preparation. Like, okay, you know, this Friday night I've got a show at, you know, 9 o'clock. You know, you get up. You know, what's your preparation that day?
Honestly, the one we did at the House of Blues, I would like to make a new steady. Manager, fiance, Bruce, from Boston, does a pretty good Boston accent. He gave us a pep talk from The Departed in the full Boston accent. Had nothing to do with what we were doing, but we were fired up to rob a bank or whatever we needed to do that night. I gotta say, there's nothing more inspiring than a Boston accent telling you to go out and give it your all.
Kid, you got this. You're fucking wicked good. You belong out there. And no matter what anybody tells you, you own, kid. Kid, you own.
We didn't rob any brakes, but we robbed some ears.
Yeah.
That is great. That would get me pumped up too, man. Be like, man, was like, is Matt Damon going to come in here and give me a pep talk or something? Like,
I have like a full day ritual, but I usually, on the way to a show, I'll pop in like a really good like CD. Like Offspring Smash is my usual go-to. Just blast that on the way to the show, and I feel just awesome. And I'm pumped when I get there.
Yep.
Yeah, you got to have good music.
Yeah.
I have to play Old Misfits because it's in right in my key range, and I sing along to warm up my voice. As soon as I get there, I try not to eat because don't deny this, every musician gets the fight or flight gig butt. You know, if you eat something, you're going to have to like get rid of it somehow.
Aaron has his pre-show
bathroom break. Yeah. So yeah. I tend not to eat. And then me and Danielle have been really conscious about this as we get not so in the teens anymore. You have to stretch your neck more than what you think is necessary, else you will be hurting the next morning. Because we don't just play music and like, here's our song. We headbang, we shake, we get down. We get pretty down, and we got to stretch.
Yeah, you don't want to dislocate a groin.
No.
I'll play shows for 6 weeks. I'll pull my groin. Power sliding accident.
That is awesome. But I tell you what, let's there's the first song we're going to hear tonight from you guys, which is off your first album, which is titled Revelation and the Palms of the Week, which I totally dig the title of that album, which is Small Silhouette. What can you tell me about this track? And you know, obviously, it was featured, I believe, on SportsCenter when it was, you know, relatively new. Talk to me about, you know, that, you know, how that came about, and you know, about this track before we get it on.
So ironically, I think it was the third song we had even written for the album, and it's the one that stuck around forever. It almost didn't even make the cut. There were some times because we'd played it so many times, it got to the point where, is this song cool enough? We still having fun playing it. And when Brenna laid vocals over it, it found a new life. It really came back for us, and now we can't get rid of it.
And Aaron had a special fuzzy moment seeing him or hearing himself play on ESPN after.
They showed a clip of Manny Ramirez when he's still with the Dodgers hitting a home run over my guitar solo, and that was glorious. Fireworks went off in my head, an eagle flew over.
He did a victory lap.
A unicorn appeared in the backyard.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, tell you what, let's take a break. Let's jam Small Silhouette, and we'll come back and chat some more. Is that cool?
That's cool.
Awesome. This is Fiction Reform Small Silhouette here on Revelator.
Never told a lie. These words from the right of my two.
Eviction Reform, small silhouette here on Revelator, talking with Danielle, Aaron, and Brenna. Tell you what, really good track, and I'm glad we're going to hear some new, some of the tracks off your new album. We're going to get into that here in a bit. But first off, I got to talk to you about the making of the new CD. You know, again, we're going to hear some tracks from that. Talk to me about the writing process from where you guys were, you know, when you did Revelation in the Palms of the Week to where, you know, getting into the studio and making the second record, Take Your Truth.
The first one we did was, I came in completely, like, secondhand. Aaron and Danny had finished the whole album almost. Like, it wasn't mastered or anything, but it was damn near close to being done of just music, you know, bass, guitar, and drums. And none of the songs had personality. Like they had personality, but no, like, melody or no main personality. And I had to come in and kind of find it, which was a new challenge for me. But it was fun, and it was a fun challenge, and I like the hardness of that. But the second album, it was more organic, that we all had a chance to kind of start each song from scratch. And I mean, I remember playing a couple riffs at a practice, and nobody really kind of felt it, and so we never moved forward with it. Like, it was just, if a song's not good, we didn't do it. We each had our own input on each of the songs, and we were able to massage them over till they were perfect. And I like doing it that way much better than the first, and the next album's going to be even better. We're going to do it the same way, do it from scratch. Everybody all has an input.
And I joined the band right before they started tracking this album, so I joined the band just to help them play shows because their bass player is not available. And when I joined the band, they're like, okay, you're playing these shows, and here's 14 songs. Learn them, you track, and go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, our producer, Chuck from Basement Records, real thrilled with that one.
But then I ended up knocking the tracks down in 3 days. So yeah, quicker, he can suck it.
Quicker than any of us.
Yeah, the first record, like, to reiterate what Brenna said, really was Danny, the drummer, and myself working with Chuck in the studio. We had everything completely produced and laid down. So we, you know, there's that element of what do we do here? And there's a lot of fill in space because we didn't have a singer, and I took a bunch of guitar solos I probably didn't need to take. So the second album came a lot more organically because we all knew each other's tendencies and where someone was going to go and how Brent is going to sing over this part or what Phil needs to go where. You know, we still use Chuck again to produce it, but it was a lot more band input and a lot more group thinking.
Very cool. Now, sounds, you know, obviously growing as a band, getting Danielle in there, and obviously, you know, she tracked it with 3 days. That's impressive. You know, any tension in the studio? You guys seem like really, really cool people, so I imagine there's probably not a whole lot of tension. But is there any? Who's the jokester in the band, or you guys kind of all take part in that?
I think all of us, but I think I set the maturity of the band at least back like 10 years,
at least. 2 10-year-olds.
But all of us really are kind of.
Yeah, we all do. We have working song titles called Bathtubs and Buttholes and Memory of a Mongoose. Like, we get ridiculous with it. It's pretty much across the board.
But for tracking, mostly it was, I think we did it all pretty separate, right? Like, everyone came in on their own days. As far as, like, joking around goes, I did background vocals on this album, and I'm not, at the time I wasn't that experienced. I was having a lot of trouble. So Chuck would ring in and give me crap about it, and I go, "Well, I finished bass 3 days, so this is, you know, you're making up your money right now."
And it turns out my nasally drone, I spent a good 8 hours tracking backup vocals.
And then we got used.
Yeah, you won't hear more than 2 seconds. I think I got a
Aaron's
haze.
Good at haze.
I got a haze.
Haze and hose.
Nasally drone doesn't go well with female vocals. I learned.
Yeah, we did all individually because all of us have completely full time, if not overtime, day jobs. You know, music is not the way society lets you make it out to be, this glorious, glamorous lifestyle. You have to work really hard and budget your time. And so we weren't in the studio much together, actually tracking. We were all together when we were like listened and edited and all that stuff. But the tracking itself, it's hard for us to all get time to do it together. So I had to do it late nights after work. Danielle did it probably on the weekends as well with the other boys. So it was. That's another reason why it was fun to see this album at the end, because we weren't able to hear what it sounded like all together as a group. We had to wait till like the very end before it was ready to be edited. Like, oh crap, this sounds so good.
Yeah, we put a lot of faith in outside sources to
make
it sound good.
It sounds, that was an epic day when we finally heard everything all together, like all the layers of guitars, all the background vocals with the vocals, all the drum fills. Like, it was, It was a sweet moment.
Yeah, I think nothing was cooler than going home and listening on your car stereo your own music.
No, it sounds like you know the people you're working with did you justice. I mean, the CD's great. There's strong songs throughout. Hi-Fi Violence. I mean, Who's to Blame? The tracks, you know, on and on. There's a lot of great tracks. Lyrics, hooks, vocals, drum beats, the whole thing. It came together really well. I really enjoy it. And I have to ask, it's something I haven't asked you guys, is how did you come up with the name Fiction Reform?
We kind of went back and forth for a while with just random names because we were just starting. And I remember, I don't know if you remember this, Aaron, the first name was Parallel Works.
Yeah.
It was just something to fulfiller because we didn't have anything. And so
never clicked.
No. We just kind of went back and forth with random words, you know, with this versus that and that versus this. And one that kind of kept being formed was Fiction Reform.
Although, if we had known that vagina cookie was available, we probably would have taken that.
We would have been rock stars by now. We would have been opening up for, yeah, oh my God. And yeah,
you guys would have been on 60 Minutes with Pussy Riot. I mean, it would have been, you know.
See? We deal. Would have been close. Famous.
Well, to a serious note, I think the reason it kind of stuck with all of us is because when we look back at the lyrics and stuff we were writing, where we wanted to go with the music, it was more about, let's not get carried away. Let's not write ridiculous songs about fantasies.
And wizards and dragons.
Epic metal.
And let's not overinflate who we are and make ourselves sound important. Yeah. Or like
we're not the Beatles.
Yeah, or that we have some incredibly tough life that we may or may not actually have. You know, keep it real.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Fiction Reform is just a fancy way of saying reality.
Right on. No, I really dig it. Now, the second track we're going to hear tonight is Smoke and Whiskey, which is off of the album Take Your Truth we're talking about. Now, I have to ask before we get into this actual track, what is your drink of choice?
I'm a Jameson and ginger kind of guy.
I'm a big beer. I like beer a lot, so I'm easily pleased. So I usually grab for a beer first because that's usually what's most around.
All of the above.
Yeah, if it's free, it's me.
Yeah. Right. That's not the best. It's for me. Right now, I am on a big kick for a nut brown ale. It's just so delicious. It sounds ridiculous, but it's so good.
It's a great soundbite.
That and, that's a soundbite. I love nut brown ale. and white Russians.
The dude, man.
Dude, the dude abides. There's no doubt about that. And Jameson and ginger ale is a great drink, by the way. That's one of my favorites as well.
Thank you, sir. I'm a big fan.
It keeps your stomach settled.
Yeah. Well, I mean, after you have some nut brown ale, you're probably going to want to keep your stomach settled with some Jameson and ginger ale. Actually, you know what? No, you probably don't want to mix those two. That's probably not a good idea.
Would not be good.
And then you need some Pepto-Bismol.
Yeah.
That just Pepto-Bismol, nut brown ale, and Jameson and ginger ale.
You like to party?
Like to party. Yeah, I was gonna say,
you might as well take a couple Tylenol PMs and a Vicodin and call it a night.
Now we're sold.
We'll tell you what, let's take another quick break here. This is Smoke and Whiskey, Fiction Reform here on Revelator.
Yeah. downtown one more round, down the rabbit hole. Swallow my pound of flesh to death. What you see, what you get, what you get. There's nothing left.
Smoking Whiskey, Fiction Reform here on Revelator, hanging out with the band Fiction Reform. Really dig that track, man. I really, really do. I like that track so much it almost makes me want to recreate that redhead to do at your show and jump around my little studio here naked. That's how much I like that song.
Yeah, it's encouraged. But on your website, people get a lot of hits.
Yeah, I'll probably scare a lot of individuals as well, I would assume. But I tell you what, I want to talk, about the song Smoking Whiskey. I mean, talk to me, lyrically, how that song came together for you.
I don't know how any of these things start. They just kind of, all of a sudden, I'm like speaking these words and I'm writing them down. And, that's a good idea. But I think when I started to actually make this into a tangible lyric, like a song lyrically, is my inspiration was Elvis Costello, the song This Is Hell. I don't know if you've ever heard that song before, but yeah. He paints this picture of a bar scene and these people afterlife, and it's just a really shitty bar and this uncomfortable feeling of you're going to be stuck here forever. And at the time, still at the time, I was just doing a lot of drinking and debating, man, is this going to be my life? Like, am I just going to end up another, loner in the bar? And even though it's not reality, you still have that strong feeling. And I just fed off that negativity for the song and try to channel that This Is Hell kind of song feeling about it. So I just try to describe every single scene that you would see at a CD, depressing, oh my God, this is not where I want to end my life.
Most kind of tavern. Art.
Yeah, most tavern, kind of, minus the Flaming Homer.
Could be another song, though.
Yeah, could be another song, Flaming Homer.
Flaming Homer. Nice. Dope. But I tell you what, let's switch gears a little bit. We talk about all kinds of stuff on this show, sports, movies, TV shows, that kind of thing. Now, I know, Aaron, you're a Chiefs fan, and Danielle, you're a Miami Dolphins fan. I have to ask each of you, what do you think of your off-season moves here with your football teams?
Frankly, I'm excited we're doing anything, because usually we're mediocre all the time, and we just stay mediocre. And even we're spending all this money on Mike Wallace and all these other players. Yeah, it's a lot of money, and it could go completely wrong, but at least we're finally getting off our asses and doing something to not be 7-9 for the fifth year in a row.
KC had a great team last year that just played awful. Them scrapping the entire front office, I'm okay with. I don't like the fact that we're taking everybody's backup quarterbacks and making them our future franchise QB. I like Alex Smith. He's a nice guy. He got benched for a lot of the season for a team that went to the Super Bowl. So, how do you judge?
Just for a concussion, though. It wasn't like it was performance-based.
Yeah. Joe Montana never
had concussions. He didn't pull a Tebow and just totally suck it up. Butt fumble.
Yeah, so it's going to be another interesting year. I always have high hopes going into it. Yeah. We got a great running back. That's all you need.
Yeah. And we lost Reggie Bush, but I love Ryan Tannehill. And I love Lamar Miller, which is one of our other running backs who showed a lot of promise last year, so I'm not too worried. That's all I'm shooting for.
I like Lamar Miller. He came from the University of Miami, a really good back. As far as the Chiefs, it doesn't surprise me that the Chiefs scrapped their front office, because that front office was in Cleveland at one time, Romeo Crennel and company. So I feel your pain. I think we won 11 games in 3 years with them. So.
Yeah. Well, two years ago, AFC champs, or no, AFC West champs.
AFC West, yeah.
So let's not completely knock them. Yeah. I was riding high that year. Pioli, everyone celebrated when he came to Kansas City from New England. It didn't pan out. Turns out Tom Brady makes people look good.
Yeah. That damn Brady. I hate him so much. That's one another thing too. Brady has maybe at most 5 years, and after that, Miami is to the top of the AFC East. He's gonna retire, and then Bill Belichick will retire, and it'll be all gravy. All gravy. That's all I can hope for.
Don't forget to talk about teams that I hate that are doing poorly. San Diego Chargers.
Woo!
Oh boy, bringing up the rear. They're just working hard at nothing.
Raiders.
Love it. Oh, I'm more excited for the Raiders than the Chargers.
That's classic. Miami's in that division with the I call him evil Tim Tebow. I think he's really not Jesus at all. I think he's really the devil. And evil Tim Tebow, when he goes down on one knee, he's praying to the devil.
Yeah, and it's also like people celebrate for being a great football player. He's not a great football player. He can run. He should be maybe a fullback or something like that, but he's not a quarterback. He can't, his arm is not strong.
And he should play at Sunday school. That's where exactly what league he should be in. He should be in the Sunday school league with like 15-year-old kids.
Yeah, and I want to ask how he didn't end up in Jacksonville.
Yeah, he was supposed to.
Yeah, what happened?
Yeah.
Like, that's the only place that will celebrate him anymore.
Yeah.
Didn't make it happen.
Yeah.
Even Jacksonville's like, dude, you seem kind of phony. Sorry.
Yeah.
Stick with Henny.
The one good thing about being in the AFC East is you've got the Bills and the Jets to make Miami look not that great. But then when you're up against the Patriots, you're like, I feel like crap. Being second in the AFC East is not that great.
Right. Well, Brenna, I know you're kind of sitting there and you're like, ah, football. I know you're into Walking Dead, right? So you finally got caught up on the series. What do you think of the third season so far?
Spoiler alert. I haven't seen it.
Oh, really?
Take a lap.
Yeah. Take a lap, Aaron.
Go to the bathroom. Adults are going to talk now.
Yeah. Cover your earmuffs. Earmuffs. Oh, my God. Where do I begin?
Rick's dead.
Yeah. My favorite scene from the last episode, the writers and directors did an amazing job of, I freaking hated Merle. Like, he's just not a good dude. If he died, I wouldn't care less. I just wouldn't think two thoughts about it and go, yeah, the world's better off with him. But the way they transitioned him into someone who's broken, to being a martyr, to being a hero, to a martyr. And I was like, well, I cry for anything, so that's neither here nor there. But I was tearing up like, no, you go, Merle. You take one for the team.
But what hit me worse is Daryl showing up. Everyone loves Daryl. He's like the best character on that show.
Yeah,
but,
seen
him like stare in the eyes of zombie Merle and just cry. And then like toy obliterate the guy's face with the knife, just smash him to pancake bits.
There's
like
so many good actors in that television series. It's amazing.
All right. We got the cynic moment, though. We're talking Walking Dead. I'm going to give a voice to all my internet friends. Why is the grass in the prison so perfectly mowed and manicured?
Okay. Why is Carol's hair so short?
Yeah. How come Rick still has a clean-shaven beard?
Like, Walking Dead producers, put one goat out there and be like, oh, the goat ate all the overgrowing grass. Let's move on.
He's a hungry goat. Well, how can Merle hotwire a car with one hand?
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, I have a hard time with all the inconsistencies.
Although, what they did in the first series that me and Bruce are making fun of is Andrea looked hot every single episode. Her hair was perfectly done, her makeup. And I'm going, well, come on. But then the second season, she does look haggard. So I'll give them that much. At least they're trying a little bit harder.
And wasn't she the one driving the 2013 model car? Does anybody else notice that but me?
Well, no, by the way.
Well, you work for a car company.
If you want to survive a zombie apocalypse, you need a Ford Fusion Hybrid. Clearly, you don't need to stock up on gas. The sun will take care of it.
I want to see, like, Carl on a Segway. Trying to, like, get over, like, the 4x4 terrain.
Or having the Kenny Powers spider.
That's awesome. Very good stuff. You know, my favorite part, obviously the season finale is coming up, but my favorite part is before Merle goes on his redemption moment there, he hotwired the Cutlass with one hand, which is phenomenal. And he's sitting there and he's got a bottle of whiskey and he's jamming Motorhead like, yep, here we go, you know. And then he goes, does what he does. You know, I think that's really cool. And interesting to see what happens on the season finale. It'd be very, very good. It's a great show. It's well written. And looking forward to see exactly what happens, but I'm going to switch gears on you again here. You guys have a bunch of live shows coming up in May. So talk to me about, if people are interested, in the area, or, what tours and shows can you guys talk to us about, and how can people find out more about you guys?
Well, all our shows are listed on all our website, like fictionreform.com. We'll have everything, Facebook. We post it on Twitter. But coming up in May on the 4th, I believe, we're playing in Whittier. Do you know what band? Destiny Knife Fight and
The Shrooms.
That's at Whittier at the Phoenix 4-5. On the 11th, we're playing at the Sly Bar in Fullerton, which is kind of like our home base. We love playing there.
That's our album release party, six months in the making.
It's a little belated. We weren't able to do a record release for this last album, Take Your Tooth, because at the time, the day before it got released, the big show we're supposed to do was actually a benefit show for a friend of ours who passed, and that would just be so tacky. So we decided to wait. And then Danielle came up with the idea, like, let's do a six-month anniversary.
Yeah. No, there's no rules against doing a six-month party.
I can do whatever we want.
We're making this up as we go along. Come on.
So I think, are we doing the $6 idea?
Should we push that? Yeah.
What we're going to do is we're going to do, for a six-month anniversary, we're going to have $6 shirts, $6 CDs, you know, $6 whatever you want to give us $6 for, we'll sell it to. And not 666 reference, but just mainly, you know, six-month record release party.
Yeah, and that will be on our website, too. Like, our Take Your Truth will be available at fictionreform.com for May, in May for $6.
Yeah, Ryan, for all your listeners, they use the promo code REVELATION on the
fiction. REVELATOR.
Sorry, REVELATOR. Yeah. I get our album and our interviews mixed up.
Yeah.
REVELATOR, actually get a nice little discount on the Fiction Reform site.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool, man. Well, I'll definitely make sure we get that out, and appreciate you guys coming on. And the last song tonight we have is On the X. We close tonight with that track. What can you tell me about this track? Another great track from the album, and I encourage people to definitely go check the website out. And we'll have obviously links and stuff on our website on omnis.tv as well, where people can find you guys. Talk to me about this track when we close out tonight.
For me, something that touches home base with me is being a female in music. And trying my ass off every day, and Danielle knows it too, mm-hmm. to not be just a girl, to be actually like a musician who practices their craft. It just boils my blood when I see female musicians using nothing but sex to sell their band. And this song's kind of about it, like sign on the X to sell your sex, but no one's going to bite it. Because over time, beauty fades and people lose interest really quickly for something shiny. And we're here to last, and we want to create a legacy and have some longevity to it. So that song's kind of about just live it up while you're young, baby, because, you know, it's all going to end. We're all going to be dirt in the grave one day, and I take a lot of pride in what we do. So that's what that song's about for me.
Well said. I've had a blast tonight. I hope you guys have had fun as well, and we should definitely you know, touch base again. I'd love to have you guys back on at some point. And I have no doubt that I had a blast. I have no doubt that, you know, when people start hearing this album and word gets out, people are really going to dig it. And again, thanks for your time tonight. And we'll close out with On the X, Fiction Reform.
Scream and cry, you broke the line. It's moment to decide. Living up.
That is On the X Fiction Reform. And again, thanks to our guests tonight, Fiction Reform, Danielle, Aaron, and Bren, for coming on. Had a blast. Really, really great band and a good group of ladies and gentlemen. And for more information about the show tonight, you can head on over to omnes.tv. That's omnes.tv. Click on Revelator on this episode number 4. And now let's move on tonight with some NASCAR, baby.
Tony, what angered you at the end of the race? What did you take issue with?
What the hell do you think I was mad about? Dumb little runs us clear down to the infield. He wants to about everybody else, and he's the one that drives like a little I'm going to bust his ass.
He's going to bust his ass. That's your NASCAR update of the month here on Revelator. NCAA bracket, is your bracket busted? Because mine sure as hell is, I tell you that. What an opening weekend. Florida Gulf Coast, LaSalle, Wichita State Shockers. And you know what the most annoying thing it really ticks me off is? The people who go, oh yeah, yeah, I had those guys. I picked them in my bracket. Those people, you know what, I just want to crinkle up my paper bracket and make those people eat my bracket because I didn't fill out 9 brackets. Yeah, I picked LaSalle in the Sweet 16. Shut up. No, you didn't. How about you go ahead and name me someone off one of those teams or the coach? Oh, no, you don't know anybody off those teams? Yeah, no shit. Look, I will say this. This next week coming in, you know, Georgetown and Gonzaga getting upset. I had a lot of those teams. New Mexico getting beat by Harvard? What? Hell of a – come on, Lobos. That had to be one heck of a ride back to Area 51. New Mexico getting upset by Harvard. I had New Mexico in my Final Four along with Kansas, Syracuse, and Louisville, who are all still remaining in this tournament. Remains to be seen how that plays out. Some tough matchups. It very well could be 4 Big Ten teams in the Final Four. You got Michigan, Indiana, Ohio State, and Michigan State. They could all end up being there at the end in the Final Four of the best conference in college basketball. And if I'm an NBA GM and I'm looking around at this college class heading into the NBA draft in June, I'm very, very disappointed. I mean, you want to talk about a weak class? I mean, there's really nobody that sticks out. I mean, there really isn't. I mean, there's a couple good, solid basketball players. But if you're at the top end of the NBA draft in June and the top 5 picks, there's no one in that draft board that goes, oh, this is the guy we're going to change our franchise with. There's not a single guy like that coming out in this NBA draft. So if I'm an NBA GM, I'm nervous about having a top 5 pick. I really am. And speaking of NBA, I tell you what, they're closing out on a very solid season. A very interesting playoff race as well. And the Miami Heat, led by LeBron James, closing in on history. They've won 27 in a row now and only several games away from breaking the record of the 71-72 Los Angeles Lakers that won 33 in a row. Look, the Heat have been winning games by an average of 11 points per game. They have some tough games coming up. They go to Chicago. They have to play San Antonio and the Spurs on the schedule. Those are probably the best shots for them to lose a game. But LeBron James, he's going to win MVP this year. He's been unbelievable. I still don't like the way he left Cleveland. I'll never forgive him for that. But I can acknowledge that this kid at the age of 27, you know, 28 years old, is the best player in basketball, hands down. There's no doubt about it. He is unbelievable. The stats and statistics he's putting up on this win streak and really all season is unbelievable. It's amazing. You know, I'm really into the history stuff of the league. And yeah, some are going to say, yeah, the East is watered down. And the East is. The East is awful. It's the Heat to lose. I don't see anybody in the East beating them in a best-of-7 series. And you look out West, the Spurs. Look, the Spurs in Oklahoma City, number one, number two seed, with about 12 games left in the season, already have 50-plus wins. You got 260-win teams out of 82 in the West, potentially. The Nuggets, another team that was really on a hot streak, just had their win streak snapped. They're now the 4 seed in the West. You know what? I've been hot on Denver all year. I said, when they get it together with Iguodala and that trade they made last season, they get it together with George Karl, they will run you out of the gym at the 4 seed with home court advantage. That is a very dangerous team in the NBA. I'll say it again. I'll say it every week until, you know, the playoffs come. I like Denver a lot. Do I think they can win it all? No, I don't think they can win it all, but they're definitely going to be a tough out in the second round, and I sure as hell would want to play them in the first round. And you can't talk about the NBA without talking about the Los Angeles Lakers. You know what? They finally sneak into that 8th spot. They're only a game and a half up with about 12 games to go. They've lost, you know, 6 out of their last 10. You know, the Utah Jazz, they've lost 7 out of their last 10. So, but the thing to keep in mind here is that the Utah Jazz hold the tiebreaker over the Los Angeles Lakers this year. So keep that in mind if they end up with a tie record. And the Lakers have to play the Houston Rockets, another team right in that 7-8 range, in the playoffs the very last game of the season. That game could determine whether or not the Lakers get in or out. And if they lose that game and end up tied with the same record as a game out with Utah right behind them on their heels, even though Utah's not playing very well, Utah owns that tiebreaker, and the Lakers would be out of the playoffs. Unbelievable. To have, you know, 4 superstars on that team, Dwight Howard, Kobe Bryant, Pau Gasol, and Steve Nash. Granted, they haven't been on the floor together a whole lot, but still, to have four guys of that caliber on your team and not make the playoffs is uncalled for, and I still don't think firing Mike Brown was the right thing to do. Now let's close out the show tonight with This Week in Music History. March 25th, The Who and Cream made their U.S. concert debut at 58th Street Theater in New York City. The extravaganza was hosted by DJ Murray. 1975, Aerosmith played at the War Memorial Coliseum in Fort Wayne, Indiana. It was the first show of a 63-date tour in North America of Toys in the Attic Tour, 1975. 1986, on March 25th, Guns N' Roses signed the worldwide deal with Geffen Records, and the 1987 album came out, Appetite for Destruction, which sold in excess of 28 million copies worldwide. Also born on this day was Elton John. March 26th, radio stations in South Africa banned Stevie Wonder's record after he dedicated the Oscar he won the night before to the Academy Awards to Nelson Mandela. Also on March 26th, 1994, Soundgarden entered number one on the U.S. charts with Super Unknown. Also born on this day, March 26th, 1948, Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. March 27th, Elvis Presley recorded what would be his last major hit, Burning Love, a hit number two on the U.S. charts, number seven in the U.K. Also March 27th, 1984, Metallica made their live debut in the U.K., playing in London. 1986, Van Halen kicked off their 1986 tour, 112 dates, at the Herschel Memorial Coliseum in Shreveport, Louisiana. It was the band's first tour with Sammy Hagar on lead vocals. March 28, 1973, Led Zeppelin released Houses of the Holy in the UK. Also on March 28, 1981, Blondie started a 2-week run at number one with their U.S. single Rapture. It was the group's fourth number one hit. March 29th, Rolling Stones' Mick Jagger was injured by a fan who threw a chair at him. He required 8 stitches to close the cut. And also born on March 29th, lead singer of Jane's Addiction, Perry Farrell. And on March 31st, 1958, Chuck Berry's rock and roll classic Johnny B. Goode single was released. And on March 31st, 1995, Jimmy Page escaped being knifed by a fan who rushed the stage at a gig at Auburn Hills, Michigan. The fan was stopped by two security guards and actually ended up knifing the security guards. They ended up living through the incident. And the stabber ended up telling police later that he wanted to kill Jimmy Page because he was satanic. Seems pretty sane, right? Hey, I want to thank Fiction Reform tonight, Mike. Wonderful job, as always. Got a big show next week. Jeff from Three Pill Morning and Michael from Terrorizing Records will be joining us, a double guest next week, so definitely check it out here on Revelio. That's omnes.tv, omnes.tv. It seems harder to enjoy the finer things in life. Until next time, do so.
This was Episode 4, Brown Nut Cookie Ale, Who Wants a Mint? For show notes or links to topics discussed on this episode of Revelator, or to experience previous episodes, head on over to omnes.tv, that's omnes.tv, and click on Revelator. Thanks for listening.